Well, if you know a child with autism, you'll want to pay close attention to this new, fascinating, and hopeful study. We've discussed autism before on HealthLink On Air. We learned that it's a spectrum disorder, meaning those with autism, children and adults, function at higher or lower levels across a spectrum of ability. From high functioning, where it's difficult sometimes to tell someone's affected by autism, to low levels of function where there seems to be little or no eye contact or communication. Well, a report about a study that took place in Baltimore has many who know the world of autism taking note. And that's our discussion this morning. A study which was very small asked parents to fill out a form about their autistic child's behavior when they got sick and ran a fever. Well, it turns out there may be a real difference in behavior when a child runs a fever. Parents report it's all good. Many say their child's ability to communicate improves with a fever. So, of course, we needed to go behind this headline. We put in a call to Dr. Gregory Liptak, University Hospital's autism expert. Good morning, Dr. Liptak.
Good morning.
So, what do you make of these study results?
Well, they're really fascinating, but parents have been telling us for a long time that children often have these times during fevers or other illnesses when they seem to bloom and their behaviors change and they start speaking, and when the fever disappears, they go back to the usual state.
So you've been hearing it, what, anecdotally for a long time?
Yes. In fact, it's been reported since the mid-1970s, off and on in the literature.
Well, you know, yesterday I went online to see if I could find parents who were talking about this online, and sure enough, I found just what you're saying. There were 20 different commentaries to this headline that I read, and 18 of these parents reported that absolutely they had observed this. What do you make of it? Where do you think it comes from?
Well, I think it provides us with very hopeful information, because many people in the past thought that these children simply didn't have the ability to speak or to behave differently. But if they get better with the fever, it means that they actually have the ability. But for some reason, that ability is being covered or blocked by a process that we don't completely understand. And the fever seems to free them, to allow them to do skills that we didn't think they were able to do.
So is this something that has been studied before, or is this just the first study we're reading about?
Well, it hasn't been studied in autism. But interestingly, years ago, when people had syphilis, they would have neurologic signs and symptoms from syphilis, and people would give them malaria, and when they had fever from the malaria, their symptoms got better. And so back in the 1800s, people actually were treating neurologic symptoms by giving people fever. We can't give, it wouldn't be ethical nor wise to give children with autism malaria, but if there's something we can do to imitate the fever but not make them sick, perhaps we could uncover the skills that they have already.
That is fascinating. Now, I have heard before, and I don't know where I read this, but I've heard that fever really is something that a body develops to help take care of itself. That would seem to bear this out, wouldn't it?
Well, in terms of infection, it certainly does. But in terms of neurologic function, it's a real mystery. It's a real black box that we don't understand.
What happens from here? Now, there is this study, and this is documented, even though, as I remember, the study sample was very small. I think there were only 30 children who were studied. What happens next?
Well, the study or the findings need to be replicated in another study. And I know that people are actually planning to do that, but I don't think they've actually started doing the research yet. But in the near future, they will. And this was done on the basis of parent report. And in the future, we need to do it on the basis of observation. Some people have said that these children may be getting better because they're simply lethargic and not hyperactive, and they're calmer. But I think there's more to it than that. But to do that, we have to rely not just on parent observations, but on direct observations of the children as well.
Is there advice in here for parents of children with autism? I mean, I can't imagine that we'd ever tell them to let their children get sick because then they can enjoy having them function more normally. That would be a terrible thing, I would think. But is there something that parents can be doing for their children based on this report?
Well, the one thing that they should do is to note the behaviors that they have when they are sick, because this tells them what the hidden potential is in each of their children. And that's important information to try to convince others that the information is there, the behavior is there, and we just have to find better methods, for example, with therapy, to unlock it and to release that behavior.
So would you suggest then that they perhaps keep a journal, maybe all the time, about their children's behavior and the different things that could trigger one way or the other?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what do they do, share that with their pediatricians?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I see. Okay. Very good. Well, we'll ask you to keep us updated on this phenomenon, Dr. Liptak. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's very hopeful, just as you said.
Yeah, I have to tell you, 2 weeks ago I saw a child who almost never speaks, and he had a fever about a month ago. And as he was leaving the house, he said, "I don't want to put my coat on," as clear as day, and then he never said that again.
And the child typically doesn't speak?
Right, exactly.
And he said that sentence just like that?
Yep.
That really is fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. And hopefully we can unlock the potential that these children have, and this is the first step in finding out a new and exciting way of doing that.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Liptak, for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Well, we do need to take a break, but we'll be back in just a few moments. We'll be joined by Drs. Mannion and Smith. This is University Hospital's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up, a just-in report on what I did over my Christmas vacation, or Dustin Hoffman as Richard Simmons. Well, dear listeners, between Christmas and New Year's, I did an experiment with one person, namely me, to discover the essential nature of my eating. I went outside the usual fences and feeding grounds of my life to New Haven to be with a family member while he had some "everything is okay, thanks" surgery. I lived in a hotel, ate from restaurants and room service morning, noon, and night, grazed on bunches of scrumptious cookies in the hotel lobby, gained 3 pounds in 6 days. From this experiment, I had a profound scientific gastronomic insight. We human beings are really cows or bulls. If you see a cow in action, you see life's basics: walking around, looking for something to chew and swallow, chewing, swallowing, more walking, more chewing, the occasional poop and pee, maybe a date with another beautiful bovine, lie down, snooze, up, walk, look, chew. But with all that walking between chomps and nothing but green stuff to chomp, cows didn't run into trouble under the waistline leather until they moved into cow hotels, ixnayed the walking, but kept the chew and swallow of whatever barn service delivered in the chub-you-up all-you-can-eat cow buffet. Just like me, they added fat between muscle and bone, although they lie to themselves too, just like us, and call it getting marbled. So when I saw free bagels in the New Haven pastor's surgical waiting room, and on the way back to the holiday barn, waiters delivering more luscious, fattening stuff than my usual green stuff chomps, and 24-hour room service, I chewed, said, and got marbled. Of course, it wasn't the chewing that was the problem. It was what I chewed and not doing my usual walking. What strategy can we learn from this culinary experiment so as not to succumb to these mistaken moo-moo choo-choos? Well, remember that scene from Midnight Cowboy when Dustin Hoffman, as the world-wise homeless guy walking across a New York City street, almost gets run over by a taxi, whacks the cab, and yells, "Hey, I'm walking here," and totally takes charge? Well, imagine us as cows with Dustin Hoffman heads. We'll call ourselves Dustin Hoofmans, and imagine that taxi's delivering tasty but terribles to marble us up for an early trip to cow heaven. We do our best Dustin whack. "Hey, I'm eating here." Stop that delivery in its tracks and go back to chewing the good green stuff. Wouldn't this be fun in our favorite restaurants? Imagery and rehearsal work for positive change. I'll do it if you will. I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.